Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Appel. When you have a chance, do me a solid. Check us out at consumerguide.com. Lots of cool stuff there, including my latest reviews, fun stuff, everything you want to know about the auto world. It's right there. Plus, you can stream the Consumer Guide podcast right there on our homepage, which is pretty darn cool. All right, with me in studio is Jill Simonetto, contributing editor to consumerguide.com, North American Car of the Year juror, and freelancer.
Yes.
I didn't have a pronoun ready.
That's fine.
Okay. How you doing?
You mean an adjective?
Yeah.
Prolific?
Yeah, that's what,
yes.
I meant. Did I say pronoun?
You said pronoun.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I like to parse sentences in my spare time.
Yeah.
I'm good.
So here's the deal.
Okay.
I'm exhausted.
I'm sorry.
But it's over.
Okay.
My daughter has purchased a car.
Okay. I can't wait. I feel like I need to do a little drum roll.
Yeah,
here.
I'm going to write about this, but we could talk about it a little bit right now, just very quickly. But she purchased a 2024 certified pre-owned Mazda CX-30 Carbon Edition Turbo.
Woo!
Nice car.
I thought that Mazda was off the table.
It was for a couple of reasons. Not Mazda, just the CX-30,
okay,
which would have been the only Mazda she would have considered, because the back seat's a little small. But it looks like the back seat's going to work for her and her pooch.
Okay, well, you know, and you can always put the rear seats down. And
also, after test driving 5 different vehicles, mm-hmm, she chose the fastest vehicle.
Well, it's also, I don't know what other vehicles she test drove, but I have to say the Mazda CX-30 is a really nice driving vehicle.
Our friend Damon Bell, mm-hmm, one-time co-host of the Car Stuff podcast, recently reviewed the CX-30 and called it a legitimate alternative to the BMW X1 and Mercedes GLA.
I would buy that.
So, and it is that nice inside.
Yes.
And it is that fast, and it's nicely screwed together, and it's fun to drive. So there you have it.
Yes.
She doesn't love the color, and the Carbon Edition only comes in one color. So we're dealing with that. It's like mica, sand, something, something. Mm. It's a good-looking color. It just doesn't quite stand out in traffic.
Is it like a bronzy color? I guess I'm not.
No, more of a, almost like a metallic version of a Toyota sand color.
Okay. That's not horrible.
No, it's nice.
Okay.
It doesn't look black or white or silver.
Well, yeah, which is the majority of the cars out there.
This is Monday when we record this. She's actually picking up the car tomorrow. But we test drove 5 cars. It is amazing how long it takes to test drive 5 cars.
Okay.
And here's a weird fun fact for you.
Mm-hmm.
The Hyundai Kona,
mm-hmm,
no longer exists. They have sold out.
Oh.
Of 2025s. They're
okay.
Gone.
Uh-huh.
And 2026s aren't in yet. So if you're looking for a Kona, either wait a little while or go drive a Kia Seltos.
Right. Or
which
buy
we
used.
Did.
Buy used.
We did. There's it's a strange, for certain models, there are a strange number of one-year-old certified pre-owned vehicles out there. And I'm not entirely sure why. Although we may have talked about this last time.
Mm-hmm.
The Alfa Romeo Tonale.
Right. Right.
Which was only that horrible plug-in hybrid for a while.
Yeah.
Those are free used. You can buy a 2024 Alfa Romeo in good condition with low miles for less than $30,000.
So not exactly free, but certainly
no,
not.
No, but it's a shockingly good deal. And you have to be prepared to insure an Alfa Romeo. But the maintenance is going to be really Stellantis, not Alfa. It's, mm-hmm, so interesting way to go. But we're done with this. She's excited.
Good.
And that's it. And now we have to sell. Hey, I can just try and sell it right now.
Okay.
2014 Nissan Juke. It looks like a kid took it to college.
It's well loved.
It was. And it was very, very, very well maintained.
Okay.
That was a thing because I didn't want her to ever be stuck.
Fair.
All right. Anyway, that's that story. But if someone actually wants that Juke, let me know.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
That's really cool.
As a dad,
uh-huh,
who writes about cars,
uh-huh,
that was the pinnacle of my whole life career right there.
Just
buying my daughter a car.
Yeah.
I'm done.
You're done. You've achieved.
Yeah.
Achievement unlocked. I have questions for you.
Yeah.
As somebody who reviews cars and occasionally buys cars, How was the process for you? Like did you go in and like how was the negotiation? Did people know what you did when you went in?
No, I never told anyone.
Okay, good.
And they never asked me why I knew all this stuff about cars either.
Right.
And I wasn't like showing off or anything.
Right.
But there wasn't a lot that they could add to the discussion.
Yeah, it's like I've done my research.
But no, yeah, right. But no one ever asked. Interesting thing is negotiating. Mm-hmm. Is kind of becoming a thing of the past.
Oh.
One of the interesting things is that going by like Carfax, and Carfax, mm-hmm. you can now, they list cars.
Yep.
For sale. They list cars, how long they've been on the ground, mm-hmm. and where their price is relative to the average transaction price for that car.
Right.
So this particular car, which is kind of a strange color, mm-hmm. and is a turbo, which is kind of out of the price range of a lot of people, mm-hmm. is strangely affordable. Huh. And it was listed as $1,200 under the average transaction price for that car. And I'm talking to the salesman. He's like, yeah, there's not really a lot more we can do here. And I believe him.
Yes.
Because it is so easy now. I was fully prepared to go into this battle, you know, and put on my tough guy hat and really negotiate. And it ain't necessary.
Yeah.
It is easier to buy a car than it used to be.
Yeah. And I mean, especially if you buy used, because there's so much research out there. You go to Kelley Blue Book or Auto Trader or Car Gurus.
Yeah.
And you can research the transaction price of used cars and what fair value is. And so, you know, knowledge is power and people go in knowing what other people are paying for the car.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's $200 or $300 left on the table here, but they were really nice. Mm-hmm. They let us test drive for a long time. I had to come back and measure the car to make sure the dog cage was going to fit. I had a bunch of questions about the price and
just, right.
and they've been very cool and got back to me. And I feel like I don't really want to beat them up for $200. So
fair.
That's the deal.
Yeah.
And the salesman was really cool. Thank you, Renee. So I am going to write about this. I'll talk about why she didn't like or what she liked or didn't like about the other car she drove.
Okay. So it was the CX-30 and what else was she looking at?
Oh, she looked at the Dodge Hornet, mm-hmm. a very specific one, also in a weird color.
Okay.
And remember we talked to Cheryl Turner? LaCheryl Turner.
Yes, yes.
This was her color. Is that Acapulco gold?
Uh-huh.
It doesn't help resell the car.
Yeah.
So if you care anybody, there's a 25 Acapulco Gold Hornet sitting there on a lot in Chicago for $26,000. It's a loaded GT Plus.
Okay.
Nice car, actually. Uh-huh. So that's there. We also drove the Seltos, mm-hmm. New. We drove the Kicks, new. Mm-hmm. Interesting problem with the Kicks. We drove one other car. Oh, we drove the Chevy Trailblazer.
Okay.
Which is still as nice as I remember it. Mm-hmm. Although compared to these other cars, the interior is not very nice.
Okay.
It's just a little average.
Okay.
So I'm going to write about all that.
Okay, good. Well, I'm going to look forward to reading that. And I will say, I did write an article once about interesting colors and resale value. And, you know, usually the halo color that they launch with, I don't know if you remember that weird lime green Genesis GV60 color.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of one of my foci of this article and how much the resale value dropped just because of that weird color.
There was a bronzy brass that the last Mitsubishi Eclipse car was launched in. And every picture of it, every ad of it, every test car was that color.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it helped resale.
Okay.
But it stuck out. But yes, there are launch colors. So actually next week, later this week, I get the ID Buzz, the Volkswagen Buzz.
Okay.
And I haven't looked at what color yet. I'm going to be surprised.
Yeah.
But I'm liking the green.
I like all of the colors.
Yeah.
I like them all. I really liked that car.
So interesting stuff happened this week, other than my kid buying a car.
Yes.
Audi is killing the A4. Apparently we knew that. They just made news of it. But they're going to simplify their lineup in the A5.
Mm-hmm.
The Sportback four-door exists. They're killing the two-door versions of the A5.
Interesting.
So, and they're raising prices a lot, and they are blaming tariffs.
Well, I mean, they're not wrong about that because their cars are not built here.
They're none of them are, correct.
Right.
$800 to $4,000 price increases for Audi coming up. Chrysler launched a very silly concept car over the weekend.
Yes, I saw this.
The Chrysler Pacifica Grizzly Peak concept.
Yes.
It is what it sounds like. It's an off-road version of the Pacifica.
Yes.
Here's the thing. This thing's over the top. 35-inch wheels, crazy stuff, camping equipment. However, Toyota already sells the woodland version of the Sienna. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see...
We're going to see something.
Yeah.
Well, and so...
It won't be this extreme. And I've already written an article about it. I'll share that on our Facebook page.
When we had Chris Fuel on the show, mm-hmm. the CEO of Chrysler, a few weeks ago...
And she didn't tell us about this?
She actually hinted at it.
Okay.
Because I was like, oh, I could see using this whatever vehicle is in the Rebel Rally. And she was like, yes. So she was kind of hinting at, you know, an overlanding type concept.
It would have to be modded for Rebel use because it doesn't have any belly protection.
But does it have a lift? I didn't look at the specs.
Yes, actually considerable lift. It was like 2.5 inches.
See? So, I mean, really, yes, you would probably need skid plates. But the lift and the wheels, I think, and especially for X-Cross, which is what this would be in, would be more important.
And for people who don't know, when we say lift, we're talking about ground clearance.
Yes.
And that's to help you clear literally the obstacles in your way.
Yes.
So 2.5 inches up higher, that would be the lowest point on the car. Mm-hmm. In this case, would now be 8.5, 9 inches, something like that off the ground. And that helps.
Supers regularly compete in Rebel and they have like 8.3 inches of ground clearance. So I'm just saying.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Dodge Durango.
Yes.
Did you see this news?
No, I was actually more focused on what I think you're probably going to talk about next.
Okay. Yes. The Durango is going V8 only.
Okay.
For 2026. So the 5.7 liter Hemi engine is now the standard engine.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of engine for that vehicle, but it's also really nice.
Well, have you? So I've driven the Durango SRT on a racetrack. So much fun.
Well, that's even more engine.
Yes, fair.
I don't know if we know if that's coming back yet. That's probably.
I think we're
one announcement away from that.
And the Hellcat version, it was just so much fun.
Well, we know now that the Ram
Hemi
TRX is coming back.
Oh yes, yeah.
So that is the supercharged 6.2 liter V8,
mm-hmm.
and if they're going to bring it back for that, which is relatively low volume, they're probably going to stick it in
they're
other
have
stuff
to put
too.
It in other things.
Yeah, just to make the volume make sense. So, Durango price is going up by $4,000.
Okay.
So there you have it. Mm. We're going to talk about Durango later.
Yes.
And you can pick which quiz we do today.
Awesome. Because we're doing two episodes today. This is live, but then we're going to be.
I was not going to give that away.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. I don't even know who this group is, but someone named us the 7th best.
Oh.
I don't know if you saw this.
I did. I saw you post it.
I don't even know who this organization is, but they picked the 100 best automotive podcasts mm-hmm. of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
We were 7 on this list.
Woohoo.
So we cleared the top 10.
That's awesome.
And a shout out to our friends at Drive Chicago. They made the list too.
Oh, awesome.
So Mark and Jim, congratulations. And thanks for having us because you do that show too.
I do.
Yeah, we do their drive-bys.
Yeah, with the quick spin or...
Yeah. Oh, is there a difference between a quick spin and a drive-by? Or do they call those both?
I don't know.
They're like 3-minute reviews.
Yeah, I've never done a drive-by.
Here's the thing. I don't prepare much for a 3-minute review. And then Jim O'Brill, co-host of that show, will ask me some question I did not prepare for.
And you're like, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Very good stalling tactic.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They do make
question.
Some of these in Guadalajara. Good point.
Yes.
All right. Subaru.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, Subaru launched an electric vehicle that was... very refined,
mm-hmm.
but also very expensive
mm-hmm.
and not very interesting. The range wasn't good.
Right.
And it was overpriced. And,
yeah.
and it was out there and it was a good vehicle and it was a nice starting place for them.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's all new. Not all new. It's significantly updated for 2026 and you have driven it.
I have.
So the name stands to change, right? This is the 2026 Subaru Solterra.
Mm-hmm.
It is being updated at the same time that the Toyota BZ is.
Yes.
That's no longer the BZ4X.
Hallelujah.
Thank God.
I know.
Here's what's weird about that. They did have a naming structure in place, and there is versions of this. There's a BZ3 in China.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But manufacturers have a hard time globalizing these things.
Yeah. And
we don't care in the U.S.
No. And when they first came out with the BZ4X, I was just like, okay, this sounds... very strange, and I don't understand. Well, you know, the BZ is beyond zero.
Uh-huh.
And then 4X was supposed to be like, oh, it's, you know, four doors and it's a crossover, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah, I think it was. It was four was the size class.
Yeah.
And then X was always a crossover.
Yeah.
And there's a BZ3, which I think is a small car in China.
Okay.
And again, we don't care.
No, we really don't. And thank goodness they're only calling it BZ now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Small B.
But we digress.
So that's a little irritating.
Yes.
Well, it's like ID Buzz. Volkswagen's ID Buzz, the van. ID dot Buzz. And weren't we supposed to push the Buzz together into one word?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I you know, Mini is all caps, but I never put it in all caps. Like, I don't often adhere
to Mini all caps.
Style.
Saturn View, going way, way back, View was supposed to be all caps. Like, No.
V is capital. Everything else. I do follow mostly AP style.
All right. Back to Subaru.
Yes.
Solterra.
Yes.
How is it different?
It's like, how isn't it different? I mean, obviously it doesn't get a drastic redesign, but you have the new front and rear fascia. You have new lighting signatures. You've got a lit emblem on the front now.
I want to just go back to something because I think you're using fascia correctly as plural.
Okay.
No one does that.
Well.
Most people would say fascia. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Did you do that in a review you wrote? Like, did you use the plural of fascia?
Maybe.
I have to check now.
Yeah.
It's very weird in Latin. All right. I'm sorry.
Fasci, fascia? Yeah. I don't know.
Stadii?
Yeah. I took 4 semesters of Latin and I remember none of it.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Or at least I remember very little of it.
Yeah.
Yes. So we'll just leave that there. Okay. What's new? Back to the Subaru. We have the, so there's some of the design differences. You go inside, you have a new 14-inch infotainment screen display, which is the Toyota infotainment system. You have dual wireless chargers. You've got a better positioning for the driver's seat as well. One of our automotive colleagues, Harvey Briggs, who is his Harvey Drives, I think is.
Rides and Drives.
Harvey's Driving.
Rides and Drives.com.
And he's part of We Are Motor Driven.
Uh-huh. And he's been on the show.
Yes.
Talking Rolls Royce.
Yes. And, but so he was on the show or on the drive as well. He's 6'3". And previously with the Solterra, a lot of taller drivers had a problem with the steering wheel bisecting the gauge cluster.
Yes. The location of the steering wheel sucked.
As a petite driver, this was never a problem for me. So I specifically asked Harvey, okay, I'm like, okay, being 6'3", is this still a problem? And he said no. So they fixed
whatever. Well, that's good. And I don't know where that was going.
Yeah.
Because it's like that in the Toyota Prius too.
Yeah.
It's the same setup. And I think the architecture is related.
Yeah.
But did they use a flat bottom steering wheel?
Yeah.
And it looked like they were ready to go yoke.
Yeah.
Stop them.
Well, they were going to go yoke in the RZ, but I don't think they ever did.
Okay.
I don't think they were going to put the yoke in anything else.
Yeah.
But I liked the yoke. I got to drive it.
Really?
It was really cool.
Yeah.
But back to the Solterra. We keep digressing.
Well, you do. I'm focused like a laser.
Yeah. Laser focused. Fascia. Fascia. That's what I'm going to say to you. What else is new? So NACS charging is now standard. And
explain that.
That is a big deal. So North American charging standard, which is the Tesla charging, a lot of automakers have started switching over to that. And some automakers, when they were still with the old charging structure, would offer you a NACS charging adapter for a fee. But Subaru has now included the port factory installed. And they're offering a CCS charger for free with the purchase of the car.
Well, I thought you got both. Is that what – did I read that wrong?
It's NACS charging.
Uh-huh. Okay.
CCS port
and then the
adapter's
free.
Yeah.
And the adapter, if you have to buy, it's like $200-$300.
I think Subaru's pulling it in for free.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. I think I heard that correctly.
Here's the thing. If you're going to buy one, buy a good one.
Buy a very good one.
Just spend the money.
Spend the money and make sure it's correct for your car.
Because they do melt.
They actually melt. Yes.
There's a company that I don't know anything about. Is it called Electric? Lectech? Out there selling this stuff, and they have very, very, very good reviews.
Yeah.
And we'd love them to sponsor the show.
Or
but
come
regardless,
on the show and talk about it.
Yes. I'm trying to get them on the show to talk about it.
Okay.
But they make really good adapters. I think they're like $250.
Okay.
And they're heavy and they're solid. And I don't know who makes it for Ford, but the one that came with the F-150 Lightning, huge.
Yeah.
It's a big, heavy thing, but you want it and you want a good one.
You do not want it.
And I'm sure it'll serve you forever.
Yeah. Agree. So, and, yeah. Until we all the charging ports or all the chargers are next.
Yeah.
But so that's new. Battery, bigger, better, more range. So 278 range is the minimum. 288 miles of range is going to be the maximum.
And if that's up from, was it 228?
227.
Yeah. Which was just it's almost there, but you just want a little more. And I find that, like, I'm driving the Volvo EX30 right mm-hmm. now, 258 miles, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's plenty for me for a week.
Yeah.
So that's enough. Like, you want to get to the mid-200s, but 300 is great.
Yeah. And I've read a lot of studies that say 300 is about where people want it to be.
Yeah.
And so they are right on the money. And Subaru and Toyota are very conservative with their range estimates. I remember when I had the Solterra previously and we only had 220 miles of range, I was getting like 250. So I was getting a lot more range. And I mean, it was like 70 degrees outside, perfect temperatures, yeah. But I was getting a lot more range than what the EPA estimated.
I want to, we have to break and talk to our guest, but I want to talk a little bit more about this vehicle after the quiz, because you wrote a little bit about off-road ability too.
Yep.
And how Subaru is trying to maintain its off-road credibility with electric vehicles.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that. After the break, we're going to talk to Justin Lunny, the CEO of Everati, about the coolest thing in the world, mm-hmm. which is converting classic cars into electric cars. And their website, the photography is great, and the cars they're converting are awesome.
Cool.
We'll take a break and be right back.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. Jill, help me out real quick.
Would you like to talk about social media?
I would for just a quick moment.
Just a quick moment.
I am Car Guy Tom on X, Twitter, and Blue Sky. And my Saturday collection this year, my Car Spotter Saturday collection, did I say this year? I meant this week.
This week.
Spectacular.
Awesome.
I did eight cars.
Okay.
I had a good drive. For people who don't know, I drive around on Saturdays. That's my test drive day. And I go looking for weird, strange, rare cars. Mm-hmm. And I share them on X.
Yeah.
Using the Car Spotter hashtag.
Well, and I had a really good Car Spotter last week, too. That Oldsmobile.
Yes.
That was so cool.
Yeah.
And I was really excited I got to meet the owner.
I love B-body and C-body Oldsmobiles. Actually, the whole General Motors, that whole era of downsized, they're just really crispy looking, and they mm-hmm. were so important.
Yeah.
Historically. And there were millions and millions and millions of them, but I think rust has taken its toll.
Mm.
You don't see them anymore.
Yeah. No, this one was beautiful.
So we talk a lot about electric cars. Mm-hmm. But we don't talk that much about classic cars, mm-hmm. and we never talk about electric classic cars.
Right.
But our guest today talks about them all the time.
Yes, this is his deal.
Our guest today is Justin Lunny. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Everati. Justin, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You are many time zones away, so we appreciate you making the time and the effort to join us today. Justin, I'm at a loss to describe your company, so I'd like you to do it because you're going to do it better than I do.
That's very, very kind. So, yeah, Everati was formed to really, I suppose, create some of the world's most iconic EVs. We're pretty fortunate. We work with cars that are already loved, and we make them into something that can be used into the future. So my team is ex-McLaren, JLR, Bentley, Rolls-Royce, Formula One. So we use that engineering talent, and we really use that experience and that knowledge to redefine some really cool cars, make them really usable in the world today, and really enjoyable. And that's, you can imagine, we love what we do.
You must. And the cars are beautiful. It seems like right now you guys are focusing your attention on a few specific models. I saw.
That's right.
Porsche 911s, Land Rovers, the Pagoda era Mercedes-Benz cars, which are gorgeous. Why those vehicles?
Mm. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. We are focused very much on a few specific models. The reason for that is that each of those models has between 6,000 and 10,000 hours worth of engineering in to get it right. So
wow.
As you can imagine, yeah, doing one-offs would be extremely expensive. So the focus of the company is essentially we're an EV powertrains business, and effectively, highlighting that brand on some of these gorgeous, gorgeous cars. So the 911s, we principally focus on the 964 era, which is Umeno's kind of, a very, very specific generation that's mm-hmm. also used a lot in other resto mod type businesses. The Land Rover series, which is again, absolutely gorgeous. You know, we have a number of those on the East Coast here in the United States. So Palm Beach, Florida, the Hamptons, Nantucket, those kind of beach type kind of areas. And then we also have the Mercedes-Benz Pagoda, which, as you rightly say, is just absolutely gorgeous. And last but not least, we also do a fully electric 800 horsepower electric GT40, which is kind of interesting as well.
That's wonderful. So how is it if you chose these particular vehicles? And obviously they are gorgeous. They are historic. And I think people love these vehicles. I don't think there's a lot of question there. How is it that you guys chose to do these specific vehicles from an engineering perspective? Were these easier to do? And from an engineering perspective, how close to a modern EV do you guys come?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So to answer your first question, I'll be honest, they're kind of cars that I think have been very important, certainly in my life and some of my team's life. So they've been our kind of launch vehicles that we've run now over the last 3 to 4 years. You know, if you look at the Porsche 911, clearly it's hugely iconic. The 964, which if you're, into combustion, Singer Vehicle Design have done an excellent job of creating that into something that is really, really desirable. The Pagoda, again, the ceiling prices on those are becoming very, very high. And that's really the key thing here, which is vehicles that have that ability to justify the higher price tag. Because as you can imagine, yeah, we're entirely rebuilding these cars. They go right back to the frame, right back to the chassis. In the Porsche's case, most of the panels that go back on are carbon fiber. So again, very, very lightweight, fully integrated powertrain. So essentially what we're doing, to answer your second question, is to keep them to respect really what they were designed to be. Mm-hmm. So we always stick as close as we can to the original weight, ideally below the original weight, which we're able to do. Yeah. With our 911. And make it as analog an EV as we can. Because again, what we don't want to do, is make, a late 80s, early 90s Porsche feel like a Taycan. We want it to keep its character. We want it to keep its, steering feel, its suspension feel. And something that, you genuinely can get in and have the essence of the past, but with modern amenities, modern powertrain, things like Apple CarPlay, air conditioning that works, dials, gauges that look gorgeous, but they're showing proper EV data and the like. So really, when you see one of our cars, to the untrained eye, I'll be honest, it looks like a beautifully restored combustion car, but actually, under the skin is a lot of modern technology. And then people are using them every single day, which is what I love. We've got clients in the Bay Area, they use them every single day that, would never do that if it was still a combustion car.
Go ahead, Jill.
So you talk a lot about Porsche, but if somebody had a different classic car that they would like to have electrified, would you take on a commission or you only do certain vehicles?
No, it's a good question. So Jill, thank you for that. It's we do have what we call our bespoke division, our kind of, if you like, private office division. But given what I just said about number of hours, as you can imagine, it's not for the faint-hearted. We have a client in Dubai right now who has commissioned us to do quite a special car. That will be, probably $1 million plus just for the design and engineering of the powertrain, which is, again, not for the faint-hearted. Right. He will end up with an incredible EV out of the back of that. Bear in mind, we're using the very, very best technologies. So, we're using the motors that are used in Formula E cars. We're using silicon carbide inverters from places like McLaren. We're very fortunate. We're a UK-based company. We have a very strong and high-end supply chain, and we're able to access some of this technology. So, again, we're kind of putting tech into these cars that's otherwise found in some EV hypercars, and we're able to provide that into the kind of cars that we're working on today as well.
So, Justin, talk about the 911 specifically for a moment. And like you talked about matching the weight, but can you match the weight distribution? That's a car with a wacky weight distribution, right? You got the engine way off the back. But how does that compete in terms of, like, what is the range of that vehicle? And how does that compete in terms of performance with a gasoline version of the vehicle?
Mm, yeah. So 911 is a great example. So the Porsche 964 that is our mainstay at the moment. We can make that around 50 pounds lighter than, let's say, a 964 turbo of the same era.
Wow.
Which is great. The weight distribution itself is still 60-40. So it's still as it should be. Wow. However, the weight is ever so slightly inboard of the rear, so effectively it's not quite as tail happy as one of those eras of cars. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, performance wise, I mentioned, yes, about 50 pounds lighter than a 964 turbo, but it's about 70% more powerful. So yeah, zero to 60 is about 3.7 seconds, which isn't fast, I suppose, by really modern EV standards, but it's appropriate for the car. In other words, we're not trying to make these things dangerous, and you know, we want to make them enjoyable, obviously.
That's wonderful. So people interested in getting a car from you guys, do they buy their own car and bring it to you, or do you source these cars?
So generally speaking, we help the client source a car. So, you know, we essentially are selling the dream of an electric 911 or the electric Pagoda. And 9 times out of 10, that client will not already have that vehicle. In fact, quite the opposite. I think only less than 5% of our existing clients have ever even owned the combustion version of the car we end up building for them. And I think that's because they had this dream, you know, they had that dream of the Pagoda, maybe, you know, beautiful car to enjoy as you just described on a Sunday. But actually, probably wouldn't want necessarily to live with its foibles, you know, the fact that it may leak oil on the garage floor, the fact that it may break down, you know, that there's a number of things that, unfortunately, that, you know, the promise doesn't always deliver what you might expect. And therefore, they're people that have loved the idea of these cars and then finally want to own one that is easy to use and easy to maintain.
Justin, have you run into any pushback from classic car enthusiasts to, like, classic car purists who think you shouldn't be doing these conversions to vehicles that are basically, you know, timeless classics?
Yeah, you know, we do to a point, but it's so funny. So I was actually, I'm currently in Southern California, so I'm a few time zones away from where I normally am. I went to see one of our build partners, and we have a very, very poorly looking 1990 Porsche that, I'll be honest, is entirely unloved. It's a Tiptronic, which, if you know Porsches, was not the gearbox to have back in the day. It's, by modern engineering standards, it's not a gearbox you'd want to use. So we're taking this car that's leaking oil, that is not easy to drive, that is very, very, very sorry for itself. And certainly within 6 months, that will be an absolutely gorgeous carbon bodied masterpiece that people will be using every day. And I think that's what people forget, is we're not taking the holy grail classic cars. We're taking some of the very unloved ones and giving them an entirely new life. And I think once people realize that, yeah, again, we're not ruining that Rembrandt of cars, you know, we're not ruining it, you know, an art piece. We're just taking something that currently exists and giving it a brand new life into the future. And I think that certainly from our client's perspective is quite an attractive proposition.
I suppose, too, in the case especially of the Land Rovers, one of the things that you're probably bringing is reliability.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, look, you know, they are to many gorgeous to look at. They're really cool trucks. You know, they obviously were used many, many parts of the world, as, you know, in Middle East and certainly, you know, in various parts of the world. But they were not great on reliability. They were not great on performance. Being honest, there's bits you can't change too much. You know, I often joke on that Land Rover, it's a 1960s design. You know, we only do about 150 miles to a charge on that, which is bizarrely about the same as the petrol version. But I often joke that, you know, you need a chiropractor with you after about 30 miles anyway, because the seating position is so bad. So in reality, you know, you're making it easier to drive, certainly far more enjoyable. It will brake when you want it to, which again wasn't necessarily part of the original design. But it's fun to look at. It's fun to drive. And you're going to get looks and smiles wherever you go in it. And I think that's the other thing that I'd say is you wouldn't necessarily get that from a brand new EV.
Yeah. So Justin, soup to nuts. Walk me through this process. I just realized I got a nice tax refund. And I want one of the Mercedes Pagoda convertibles. I call you guys up. You guys help me source a car, and then you restore that car. How long will that process take, and what will that cost me?
Okay. Yeah. Pagoda is one of our most complicated build in terms of the process. So that car, as I'm sure you know, even though they're gorgeous to look at, they've had lots of them a very tough life. You know, even kind of dry state cars will need an entire overhaul. So that car is entirely stripped. So it goes again, right the way back to the chassis, the way back to the frame. That is then dipped. So it's basically almost acid dipped to ensure that we get everything that we know exactly was wrong with that, and then rebuilt up basically with either new parts of the chassis or elements that ensure that chassis is 100%. That then is coated that it can no longer get any corrosion. Mm-hmm. And then all of the body parts are put back on, either refurbished body parts or brand new in many cases as well. So effectively what comes out of that process is basically a brand new body shell on an existing chassis for a Mercedes Pagoda. Clearly, through that entire process, we've discussed paints, we've discussed leathers, we've discussed stitching. You know, we had a client recently in one of the southern states of the United States who flew over to London on his own jet to ensure that we had the exact look for the interior of the jet that he wanted on his car. So that gives you an idea of some of the clients we may have. And then that is entirely rebuilt as a custom vehicle. That process itself takes around 14 to 15 months once we have the donor car. Part of the reason for that is it goes to Germany or to Poland so that, you know, the people that I guess have the very, very greatest skills in rebuilding Mercedes tend to be clearly, you know, in that part of the world, as you can imagine. And then that is shipped back and the EV install actually happens here in the United States. And that is delivered to you as a fully functional, gorgeous looking, almost Concours standard, but clearly not Concours because it doesn't have the original engine.
Right.
Car that you can just enjoy on a daily basis. Again, not for the faint-hearted. So excluding the donor, the starting price on that is $525,000. So again, that tax refund that I'm looking forward to you getting it's going to be on the larger side generally.
Yeah, I got $200. So
perfect. Well, we're at a good starting point.
Yeah, I'll put that down.
Yeah.
So how many cars at any given time are you guys working on? Do you do like one at a time, or do you have like a certain capacity or a certain number of vehicles that you're working on?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we are, because of our distributed nature, so our Porsches actually are built in Irvine in Southern California. Mm. Our Land Rovers are built in the UK. Our Mercedes are built in Europe. And actually we work with Superformance actually on our GT40s, which is, you may know, is a US based company. So in essence, so to answer the first question, we've got seven cars in build right now. But we can scale that. So, you know, with our Porsches, for example, we can do up to 30 to 40 a year. Pagodas probably less than that, maybe 20 to 30. Land Rover is also 20 to 30. So that's kind of where we are today. But of course, we also then can scale that. So if we want to, you know, let's say we want a different Porsche. In fact, we've just launched during Monterey Car Week. We've announced that we're doing the next generation of Porsche. So the Porsche 993, which was an absolutely breathtaking and big, you know, big moment in Porsche's history.
Yeah.
We have capacity to do those in addition to existing. So again, we can scale this not to a manufacturer level, clearly. But you know, what we find is that these are kind of thought leaders, high net worth clients that want something different. And certainly, you know, we can technically do, you know, certainly north of 50 or 60 cars a year. And certainly as we grow, yeah, north of probably 100 to 200 cars a year. So it's a gradual process, but we're not there yet, but that's certainly the capacity that we're aiming at.
Wow, this is all very cool, Justin. I'm glad we talked to you today. For people who want more information, how can they reach out to you guys?
Absolutely. So the company's Everarati. I'll explain that. So Ever, keeping great cars on the road forever. So E-V-E-R. And then Rati is the goddess of love, passion, and desire, which is what our clients have for their cars. So Everarati, so E-V-E-R-R-A-T-I.com. And of course, we're also Everarati Cars on, let's say, Instagram, and we're also on other social channels as well. So we always love to hear from people who are interested in what we do.
Well, we're very interested. Justin, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much, both of you. It's lovely to talk to you.
That was Justin Lunny, the CEO of Everarati. We're going to take a break, and when we come back...
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Hi, it's Brendan from Sons of Speed. You've heard me and my colleague Paul on the Car Stuff podcast whenever Jill's out of town. But now you can hear us every week on the We Are Motor Driven podcast, along with Jennifer from Auto Exotica and Harvey from Rides and Drives. We talk about everything from sports cars to trucks to EVs and our favorite, speed. So join us each week by searching We Are Motor Driven wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom, she's Jill, and we don't have enough money for an Everarati.
No, we do not.
If we pooled our money together.
We would still not have enough money.
And then borrowed 20 bucks from producer Randy.
And then borrowed another $520,000 from the bank.
Wow. I would love to drive one of these. You know what we didn't get? We got the range on the Range Rover, about 150 miles or whatever. Uh-huh. I'd be interested to know the range of the Porsche.
Yeah.
I think there are limitations to how much battery they can get into them.
Yeah.
And they're trying to keep the weight close to original weight. So the battery works against you there.
Yeah. No, this is fascinating. I am so glad we had them on.
Yeah, we'll have to follow up with them in a year or two to see if they had any models.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I love the clip. People, we'll post a picture, but the Pagoda Mercedes, Pagoda is a nickname for the car.
Okay.
The one they have pictured here is a 280 SL, but it's the early version of the Roadster. Mm. And I think this is the generation of Roadster that came after the legendary 300 SL, the Gull Wing and the Sports.
Yeah.
Those would be way too expensive to do this to. Also, probably heresy.
Because
Because those drivetrains are pretty classic too. So, all right. It is quiz time. I have two quizzes in front of me. You already gave away the fact that we're doing two episodes today. So
sorry.
I have two quizzes ready. No, that's okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. The illusion that we just work on a holiday. I enjoyed that.
I know. Next week is Labor Day.
Yep.
So.
Without explanation.
Okay.
Do you want the quiz called Red? Or LX? Knowing that in an hour you're going to have to do a different one.
Let's start with LX.
All right. Today's quiz, the Car Stuff Power Quiz, brought to you by Consumer Guide, is LX? All you need to do is tell me if a particular model, a 2025 model, mm-hmm. is available in the LX trim level.
Okay.
I knew this was going to thrill you.
Yes, this is so thrilling, and
You might like the bonus question.
I'm not hip to LX.
All right, are you ready?
Yeah.
LX as a trim level. The 2025 Kia Seltos, which I test drove with my daughter. Still a very nice car.
Ooh, I haven't driven the 2025, but LX... Oh, I'm trying to think if that's a Kia.
The Kia Seltos and the Hyundai Kona kind of benchmark cars in that class.
Yeah, they do.
They're refined. If you get the turbos, they're pretty quick.
Yeah.
Really good use of space. The pricing is agreeable, although it's going to go up this year.
Yeah.
2025 Kia Seltos. I need to know if there's an LX.
No.
There is.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's available. LX is the base trim level.
Yeah, I was going to say, in Kia, it's usually the base trim. Yeah. But
LX, S, EX, X-Line, SX.
Okay.
And I think you need to get X-Line or SX to get the turbocharged engine, which you want.
Yes.
All right. You have no points.
Your favorite phrase.
It is. the 2025 Honda Civic Sedan. Is that available in LX trim?
I feel like it used to have an LX, but the question is, does it now? Because I'm going to say no.
Yes.
Oh, great. I'm doing awesome.
LX Sport and Sport Hybrid for the sedan.
Okay.
And I don't remember what they are for the hatchback.
Okay.
All right. You've got no points. This is getting dire.
I know it's getting dire.
Five questions total. You need three for a win. The 2025 Dodge Durango.
Durango?
Durango.
Durango. My first inclination is to say no, which is probably wrong, because I've been wrong so far. I'll say yes.
No. You're getting your butt kicked today, Jill.
I know. I knew also, this was not going to be good.
A lot of trim levels for a relatively low-volume vehicle. GT, GT Plus, RT, RT Plus, RT Premium, RT 25th Anniversary Plus, and RT 20th Anniversary Premium.
Hmm.
Those are your 2025 trim levels.
Okay.
I presume there'll be fewer next year with one engine and no anniversary editions.
Yes.
Although they might bring back an SRT.
Yeah.
So, all right. You have no points. You need to sweep the rest of the way out. The 2025 Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross, a vehicle we talk about all the time.
Because we love it so much. It actually is not that bad.
I hardly remember it.
I
do you remember that the first generation before it was freshened had that stupid spoiler that bisected the rear view?
Yeah.
That's a dumb thing to do in the modern era.
Yeah, that was, well, you know, Prius used to have that as well, the split window in the back.
Yeah.
You know, I will say it would probably be, I mean, not in a Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross, but like in a higher end vehicle, you could probably get away with it these days if you had the rear camera mirror.
Yes.
Because the new Polestar 4 that's coming out, which
no rear glass at all.
Talk about in October.
Yeah.
No rear view, like no rear glass at all, no rear window.
Weird.
I'm going to go back to no.
Correct. You have a point.
Yay!
Yeah, that's available. And this is super confusing. The base model is the ES. Mm-hmm. The next trim level is the LE. And then the third trim level up is the SE.
Yeah.
So you have ES
so
and SE.
Peculiar.
And they're separated by something that isn't.
I mean, they probably do that so that you don't get confused, but the end effect is it's confusing.
There's also a Rally Art and an SEL.
Okay.
So SEL is the top trim level, so you have 1 point.
Yay.
I'm going to write that down here. One.
I have a point.
Point. Okay, I wrote that down, underlined it three times. the 2025 Toyota Camry. Now all hybrid.
I don't think LX is a Toyota trim, because I feel like they go XLE, LE, maybe SE, but it's like XE or XSE or something like that. So I'm going to say no.
No, and you named them all.
Yes!
Nice job. Yes, it's LE, SE, XLE, and XSE. And now that everything's hybrid, the lineup's a little simpler.
Okay.
Actually, that's the lineup. There it is. You have it.
That is
XSE can be very nice. XLE can be very nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I find interesting that they've done is with the SE and the XSE, they try to go a little more sporty. And then with the LE, XLE, they try to go more like luxury.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then also the LE and SE are your value plays.
Yeah.
And they can be... A base Camry can be a very nice car for a very good price.
Yeah, and I can't remember how their pricing structure works, but I feel like LE and SE might be the same, and XLE and XSE are the same.
I don't know about the bottom two, but I think that's true in the top end.
Yeah.
And we're seeing more and more of that.
Yeah.
Like when I was driving, or not researching, the Trailblazer, the Chevrolet Trailblazer for my daughter. The RS and the Active, I think, are the same price. And
okay.
One looks off-roady and one looks sporty, and neither is neither.
Okay.
They look nice.
Neither is neither.
It is not especially sporty or especially off-roady.
Huh.
All right, you've got 2 points. You need the bonus question to make this work. Are you ready?
All right.
Do you know what the five most popular birds are in Illinois?
No. No, I do not.
They are the robin, the cardinal, the blue jay, the American crow, and the chickadee.
Chickadee. Hi, chickadee.
We're going to talk about the crow. There are 40 varieties of crows.
About the crow. I thought you said the krill. I'm like, what?
No.
Okay,
that's funny because I cracked a terrible dad joke with my daughter the other day.
Okay.
But the answer was King of the Krill. It was a joke about a show about an animated guy who was really into baleen whales. Anyway.
Okay.
It's not really funny now.
No, it is not. Was it funny the first time is the question.
Yeah, I laughed really hard.
Of course you did. That's what a dad joke is. Dad's
King of the
laugh.
Krill. It's actually funnier when my daughter gets my stupid jokes and then tells them to me deadpan. And I'm like, oh,
maybe it wasn't funny. I can see her for doing that.
All right, 40 varieties of crow. Which of the following is not one of those 40 varieties and is indeed fake?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
The New Caledonian crow.
Okay.
The Sierra Madre crow.
Okay.
The Dingus River crow. The Cuban... Oh, I thought I wrote Cuban psalm, but it's Cuban palm crow. New Caledonian, Sierra Madre, Dingus River, Cuban palm.
I kind of feel like it's going to be one of the last two.
Okay. Dingus River or Cuban palm?
And you laughed at the last one. I think you may have given that one away.
No, I'm laughing at both of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the last one.
No.
It's the Genghis River.
It's the
River.
Dingus.
Okay.
The Genghis Khan is fake. Genghis Khan? There we go. That's actually it. I'm going to sign this for you anyway.
Well, I don't want it. I didn't win.
Yeah. Okay. We didn't look at the donuts yet. I wanted to talk to you real quick and get back to the Solterra.
Yes.
When we talked to the folks at Subaru about the Forester, Subaru made an interesting decision to forego a little bit of fuel economy to stick to their roots and their core sort of U.S. Mm-hmm. marketing position and be an off-roady company.
Yeah.
And they kept their symmetrical all-wheel drive system.
Yep.
Actually hurt them a little bit in fuel economy, but the vehicle maintains its off-road credibility. But what's interesting here is they can't do that. This is an electric vehicle. Mm-hmm. So they have to get to the same results via motors.
Right.
And I don't know how the torque distribution works and stuff. But you did have a chance to do some light off-roading. Mm-hmm. Do talk about that.
Yeah. So they set up a course for us at, I believe it was at a private ranch. And there were some moguls and some hills and just some slightly rough terrain. I mean, it was nothing crazy. It's not like going to the Rubicon Trail or, you know, doing any serious rock climbing or anything like that. But it was, if you were going to go to a trailhead, if you were trying to find a little bit of an off the beaten path campsite, it was like that. And I thought it did really well. And it, you know, we did some moguls. And so there was wheel lift. And, you know, you didn't feel like the car was going to break. And it handled them very well. You didn't bottom out on anything. And I want to say there's like 8.3 inches of ground clearance.
There is.
And
because that's actually under the battery.
Yeah.
The battery in almost every modern vehicle.
Yeah.
Modern EV with any range constitutes the floor of the vehicle.
Yeah. Built-in skid plate.
No. That's actually a thing. I don't know what they... like, is there a plate, a skid plate protecting the battery?
I don't think they mentioned that. And, like, looking at the specs in my head, I don't remember that. You know, there's some extra cladding around the front and the back and the wheels, but, like, I don't think there's a skid plate. So, yeah, maybe don't puncture the battery if you're going to take it off.
That is excellent advice for the youngsters out there.
Yeah, I think that would be a bad idea. But no, I mean, it did really well. It has X mode, and when you put it into X mode, these really cool cameras pop up so that you can see the side of the vehicle as well as the front of the vehicle and the trajectory of your wheels as you turn your wheel. And so I thought that was a really nice feature and a nice touch. You're starting to see that in a lot more off-roady type vehicles.
You had raised a point, and you said that the around camera, the around view, off-road support around view presentation was locked out at 8 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the primary reason for this is they want you to start looking forward at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a decision that safety gurus and lawyers and engineers made that at that point, you better look out the window.
But there are times when you are driving off-road, and I mean, I do a lot of off-roading, and you're going 9 miles an hour or 10 miles an hour, and you the vehicle can handle it in that terrain, but it's just nice to know and get an in-depth look at where the rocks are or where your wheels need to go in the ruts. And I know it's because of distraction or whatever, but I just, a lot of other automakers, I know Chevrolet and GMC and I believe even Stellantis, so Dodge Ram, all of those, they have allowed the cameras to stay on actually at highway speeds. So
interesting.
I get that there is a lot of lawyerism that has to happen, but I just, come on, 10 miles an hour.
You know, it's funny, when we were test driving cars, my daughter has more interest than you might think in the stereo system.
Okay.
So I kept hooking up my phone mm-hmm. while she was driving.
Does she like your music?
We agree on some stuff.
Okay.
We agree on They Might Be Giants, The Talking Heads. Okay. She hates the jazz.
Yeah.
She hates the jazz.
Okay.
She used to like Mark Knopfler. But anyway.
Mm.
Anyway, she doesn't want a bad stereo. She doesn't need a great stereo. So we were hooking up my Bluetooth while we were driving. Mm-hmm. Some cars let you do it while you're driving. Mm-hmm. Most don't.
Okay.
You have to come to a complete stop, put it in park, and then you can finish hooking up the Bluetooth. So they don't want you distracted.
Yeah.
All right. Guess what we did?
Well, one more thing before we run out of time.
Oh, what?
First off, this vehicle is not going to be available until November.
Okay.
We didn't mention that yet. And pricing hasn't yet been announced, but they have said that there is not going to be a huge price increase.
Well, that's impressive. If you can get more range for less money or the same money, that's great.
More range, more features.
And speaking of that, the companion vehicle to this, the Toyota BZ, mm-hmm. price cuts.
Yeah.
Price cuts coming.
So
yeah, that's good stuff too.
Yeah.
It's interesting that the federal government no longer really wants to support electric vehicles, but manufacturers are still cranking them out.
Global industry.
And they're getting more interested. Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It is global. And the for instance, the Chevrolet Bolt EV mm-hmm. returns next year.
Yes.
I don't know how much cheaper they can make that than an Equinox EV, but we welcome an affordable EV.
We do, in fact.
All right. Now guess what we did?
Now we are running out of time. Now we've talked too much.
Yes, we did. Great show. Thank you to Justin Lunny, of the CEO of Everett. That was a very cool conversation. I need to look more about those. I want to see some test drives.
Yes.
I haven't done that, so I need to check that out. But check them out. It's Everett.
Everati.
Everati. Thank you. .com. All right. Thank you, Jill.
Yes.
Thank you, producer Randy. We'll talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at ConsumerGuide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at CarStuff@ConsumerGuide.com.